We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You're listening to Let's Talk Portland, Intercom Radio Portland's weekly public affairs program. I'm Gary Bloxham. When you start talking about drug addiction, there are alarming numbers and statistics right here in Portland. This time on the show, we're going to talk to someone whose life has been very impacted by drug addiction, but he's turned that tragedy into a way to help people, help end the stigma attached to drug addiction, and in the process, heal himself. On the show this time, I would like to welcome Eric Kilgore. Eric is the founder of Henry's Uncle. Hey there, Eric.
Thank you for having me.
So, Henry's Uncle, what is that?
So Henry's Uncle was formed in January of 2019, about a year ago, after my older brother accidentally overdosed and died in December of 2018. And after that, experience, I was the one who found him when I went to visit him in his condo when I found him. Finding him had a pretty big impact on me. As I didn't know he had a substance use issue. Growing up, we had so many, we were kind of told around the stigma of addiction, that it's a moral failure, that people who are using or abusing, drugs or alcohol, should stop. And it's, just pick yourself up by your bootstraps and just stop. Mm-hmm. And the more research I did after he passed, the more I understood around addiction, the more I realized that it's not that simple just to stop. Right. There's so much stigma around addiction. So I created Henry's Uncle to help raise awareness around addiction and for people to hopefully just start talking about it.
What a wonderful way to honor your brother. Sorry for your loss. That's tough.
Yeah, I hope so. It's one of those things where, this is where I have channeled my grief. I didn't know, there's so many things after someone, close to you dies. And, when you watch TV shows or movies, the typical grief scene is someone laying in bed for weeks crying. And which, everyone grieves differently. But for me, it just kind of went into this and I just wanted to hopefully make a difference because I myself am frustrated by, not knowing about his substance use. And also the suspicions I did have, I did have that stigma around it. And, if I didn't have that stigma, would he still be alive? I don't know those questions, but, I just don't want any other family to kind of, to go through what we have. And there's just too many families, other families in this nation that have gone through the same issue.
You said he had a substance abuse for about 12 years?
Yeah, about 12 years. It was around, so he got his first taste. So if we go back, he passed away 1 month before his 35th birthday. He got his first taste of opiates when he was around 17 because of wisdom tooth extraction.
Oh, wow.
Most teenagers, you go in, you get your prescription of Vicodin or Oxycontin. This was back, about 15, almost 20 years ago when there was really nothing around opiates, no education around opiates. They just doctors handed them out willy-nilly then. And he came home, took it, and he just told my mom, said, you know, I like the way it makes me feel. But that was it. You know, there was nothing else, you know, after that. He, I don't even think he finished that prescription bottle. And then it wasn't until another 4 or 5 years where a close friend of his introduced him to OxyContin.
Was that recreationally at that point?
I believe so. Yeah. So that's what we believe. About 4 months or so in of his first actual substance use issue, he went to my parents because he realized he did have an addiction to Oxy. And you know, when he started trying to not take it, he would get these terrible withdrawals, and he had no idea, and he was scared out of his mind about withdrawals because they're so terrible. You know, like people who, you know, describe them, it's like having the flu times 10. And so he went to my parents to ask for help. You know, and this was about 12 years ago, 12 or 13 years ago. And like my parents and many parents, they took him down to get him help. I think he was on, you know, this is where it gets fuzzy for me, but I think he was on methadone treatment for about 90 days or so. And methadone is a medication-assisted treatment for opiate withdrawals. And so when they thought that was done, when my parents thought that was done, and James was doing well, he thought, you know, hey, that's it. That's the end of his issue. And he told my parents countless times he never wanted to experience withdrawal again or, you know, use the drugs again. You know, now what we know is people who suffer from a substance use disorder, you know, it's a chronic disease and it's lifelong, and people, and that's stuff, you know, we did not know about. You know, just like many people, once you're clean, you're good to go. And that's not the case.
It's with you for a lifetime.
Yep. Yeah.
And it sounds like it started out pretty innocently for him, yep. Which is the way it does for a lot of people.
Yes.
You do get a prescription for, like you say, a wisdom tooth or a minor surgery or even a major surgery.
Yeah.
And you have those pills and
it
can take off from there.
Yeah. And from what we know, he got it from his friend who had a medical issue while playing football at Portland State University. And that's where he got his OxyContin from and so on and so forth, and started selling them. And that's how he got on his issues, and from there, you know, we believe it was on and off. We don't believe it was a consistent, you know, every day. And I should note, you know, I worked with my brother for the last 8 or 9 years in the same office, and my brother told my parents to keep it a secret, do not tell anybody. You know, they didn't want anybody knowing. And so my parents honored that wish. I think one or two of his closest friends knew about it, but I was never told. And I worked in the same office. There was maybe one or two times where I had my suspicions, but you know, it's just you know, when you have an opioid use disorder, it's you know, odorless. You can't smell it on them. He came in, and you know, if he was using, he was very, you know, high functioning, working every day. My brother and my dad and I, we have our own technology business, and I would never have known. You know, it wasn't until maybe the last 2 weeks before he passed, where things kind of started getting out of hand. And by out of hand, I mean it's not like what, you know, I think the typical people expect. It's just leaving work without telling, hey, where you're going, or, you know, just kind of disappearing for an hour or two, and or just the excuses of why you're leaving just never made sense, never added up. The highs and lows, the anger issue, where he, you know, just be talking about something, he'd get really angry. And it wasn't about those last 2 weeks where I had my very high suspicion that something was going on, but never in a million years would I think I would have found him dead from a, you know, fentanyl overdose. You know, just never in a million years would I have thought walking into his condo that night that he would be, you know, lying there dead.
Oh, well, sorry.
Thank you.
We're talking today with Eric Kilgore, founder of Henry's Uncle, which is how would you describe your organization, Henry's Uncle?
Yeah, so we're a nonprofit, and our mission is to raise awareness about addiction, you know, through the power of storytelling, really. You know, through storytelling is education. And for so long, people who have an addiction issue have kept it quiet. And, you know, a lot of that is from, you know, AA, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous. And don't get me wrong, those are wonderful institutions and have saved and helped many, many lives. But the anonymity part is what has kept addiction in the shadows. And you know, it's time for people, if they are comfortable, to tell their stories. You know, families who have gone through it as well, to tell their stories, so we can, you know, start talking about addiction as a disease, which it is, instead of just still stigmatizing it and thinking it's a moral failure and pushing these people aside and not helping them, which they need. And we have a system in place right now, a healthcare system that does not help people with addiction. There's so many barriers, you know, that come with someone who has a substance use issue, and it's so hard to find treatment. You know, many people who go to the ER just because that's kind of the last resort, and the ER docs will just say, "Hey, you know, here, you know," and I've seen this, or they'll say, "Hey, you know, here's your discharge papers. You know, stop abusing opioids. Stop, you know, or you know, the safest thing for you is actually go home and keep drinking." And those are discharge papers. And that's just so sad. Instead of having, you know, 5, 6, 10 hands, you know, reaching for them, pulling them forward, you know, to helping them out and getting them into a treatment facility, getting them a bed so they can start their recovery path. There's just so many denied entries, for people suffering from addiction.
You started Henry's Uncle about a year ago.
Yeah, that's correct.
What have the last 12 months been like for you?
It's been very eye-opening. I never expected in a million years to be in this field. You know, I thought I had my kind of career path set, but you know, after his death, after my brother's death, I you know, for me, was just, I wanted to educate myself about what do people with a substance issue go through. Because the biggest theme that I have found, and it's one of the saddest things that I have found, you know, talking with people in recovery is the word normal. And my brother said this too to my parents one night, where taking the opiate or whatever it may be, a Xanax or alcohol in this case, is, it makes me feel normal. And there are so many, you know, that's, for me, that was just one of the saddest themes, because, you know, when you hear people talk about it, you know, whether they take heroin or Oxycontin, whatever it may be, it like gives them like a warm hug. And it kind of just, you know, lets them be normal. They think they're normal because of the drug. And, you know, but really, you know, it's so sad to hear that, because my brother was such a wonderful person. You know, he was funny, vibrant, you know, hilarious. He was the clown of the family. And the fact that he had to take a drug to feel normal, you know, it just kills me.
Do many people that have substance abuse problems, do they have underlying issues like depression or things like that?
You know, there are studies out there that, you know, they do have many people with a substance use issue have a, you know, comorbid issue as well. So something else along the line, like you mentioned, depression, bipolar disorder. You know, my brother for a long time always talked about the highs and lows he had, you know, and he was always... For him, he was always trying to get his mind fixed. You know, he was always trying to find a solution, whether it was, you know, hey, do I have ADD? You know, do I have this? And there was always something going on. He talked about having the million thoughts in his head just racing. Yeah. And so when he took those pills, it calmed those thoughts down, so he could actually, from what he said, is he could function. So he felt normal. He felt, you know, respected again. He felt like he could think. And, you know, and so many times, you know, we see this, instead of treating the underlying causes of it, you know, we put so much money into law enforcement and supply side. And what I mean by supply side is trying to interdict all the drugs coming in into the U.S. and or trying to arrest our way out of this, you know, jailing people who have an addiction issue. And that it doesn't work. And so that's what I've been seeing, is we have a lot of policy failures. And because of the war on drugs for the last, you know, 50 years,
yeah,
and all that needs to change, you know, for you know, we've had 70 In 2018, almost 70,000 people die of drug overdoses. 30,000 of those people were due to fentanyl. 88,000 people last year died due to alcohol related deaths.
Those are crazy numbers.
They are. I heard those numbers before my brother passed, those statistics, and they are outrageous when you see them. But for many people, it doesn't hit home. It did not hit home for me until, I saw my brother. And for him, that was his first time overdosing and his last time, we wish we could know what was going on through his mind for those last 3 to 4 months before he passed. We just don't know. We can guess and talk about it, but we just don't know what was going on.
One of the goals of Henry's uncle is to help get over the stigma of addiction, correct?
Yep.
What kind of stigmas are out there? Because I was looking at your website and I saw a picture of your brother, and he doesn't look or fit the profile of somebody who would die from a drug overdose.
Yeah, and I've heard that a couple of times, and that's exactly what the stigma is, really. It's what we're taught growing up is it's the people on the streets who are the ones abusing drugs. It's not the people who are working every day who are, taking their Xanax or their Oxycontin or having a bottle of, liquor in their office drawer. And that's the people we don't think of. And those are the people who are using, and abusing drugs. That stigma, around a face of who we think are the culprits, is just not real. Addiction is everywhere around us. There was a statistic that I saw that 1 in 3 families in America have someone who is dealing with an addiction issue. And when you start thinking that way, a third of Americans, American families, it's everywhere. And it's not just the people on the streets. And again, we should not look at the people on the streets like they have some sort of moral failure either.
Right.
If we actually started asking, hey, how did you end up here? And how can we help? I think that would, to anyone, that goes a long way.
Yeah. I'm assuming there's a lot of shame involved.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah. A ton of shame. For instance, my brother, I'll take him as an example. He didn't want to talk about it. He told my parents to keep it a secret. He never told me. We grew up in the same room together. We shared the same office for 8 or 9 years. We were basically around each other our whole lives. He didn't tell me. My parents didn't tell me until maybe a year or so, I think, before he passed, that he did have an issue. By that time, it was about 10 years prior. So, being able to talk about it openly, understanding addiction as a disease and not a moral failure will help people, just keep talking about it, end the stigma. And again, someone made a great point. Hey, we could have the infrastructure right now of say, hey, let's just open a million recovery beds. Let's have those open. But they won't be filled until we end the stigma because people who are suffering don't want to admit it because they feel like they have a moral failure. They have that shame around them. And that's what needs to end.
Yeah, absolutely. What are the goals that you have for the next, say, 3 to 5 years? What do you hope to be doing? You're a year in.
Yeah. It's been a big learning process just in terms of the nonprofit world in general. But I've met some just one of the craziest things I've experienced so far in the last year is just the recovery community and how wonderful they are. All the doctors, all the people, everyone. It's just they are truly incredible, and everyone who's trying to help out with this cause, everyone's so giving. Even if you have a nonprofit, they're not like, oh my gosh, we can't tell you this because of, some sort of competition. Everyone just wants to help out and this. And that's just so wonderful. And so in 3 to 5 years, keep up our Henry's Uncle podcast, where we feature people who are in recovery to tell their amazing stories to help end that stigma. Because again, you'll see everyone's normal living people who ended up down this road, but What we forget as well is there are 20 million people in recovery, over 20 million people in recovery in America. We talk about death a lot, but there are over 20 million people in recovery. Keep the education going around addiction, but also hopefully in 3 to 5 years, you know, have a resource center so people and families who are suffering from an addiction issue can go, and we can, you know, hopefully provide resources of where to go. Have those connections with different recovery centers, region-wide, statewide, whatever it may be, and help them find the recovery that day. Not, you know, many times it's, oh, we don't have an opening for another 3 to 4 weeks. Well, guess what? In 3 to 4 weeks, that person might not be alive.
Yeah, things could quickly change.
Yeah, quickly change. And so hopefully, yeah, in 3 to 5 years, have a resource center open where people can just come in and we can help navigate those areas.
There's tons of information available on your website, which is henrysuncle.org.
Yes.
Tell me about some of the resources you have posted there.
Yeah, so if you just need help on finding a treatment locator, you know, we have the resources there. You know, SAMHSA.org is a great one. I believe it's SAMHSA. They are the national, basically advisory of where to go if you are in trouble, suffer from a substance use disorder, and they have a great treatment locator. You know, you plug in your zip code and you can find out. Other ones are family based, you know, like Al-Anon. Mm-hmm. You know, because many times after, you know, someone who is going through a substance use issue, many times that the family is forgotten, and it takes a load on the family.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's, you know, wonderful treatments like Al-Anon or Nar-Anon, where family members who have a loved one going, suffering from addiction, can go and just air their grievances, talk to people who are going through the same things, tell their story just to, release that stress. And then also different ways of recovery. We hear about AA or NA a lot, but there are multiple ways of recovery. There's not just one. And one of the reasons why we're in this hole is abstinence only recovery. And that doesn't work for, everyone. And we need to be open to the fact that, hey, there are evidence-based treatments like medication-assisted treatments such as methadone or buprenorphine, where it reduces those cravings for opioids. And the person can go back, have a functional life. He can go, he or she can go back to work, be with their family, be present. And a lot of people say, oh, it's just a crutch. Well, no, it's not. It's it's the gold standard of, people, coming off opioids. So we need to be open to that and not just say, oh, are you abstinent? So, are you not taking anything else? And you have to be abstinent only to be in this recovery program. That's just, you got to end that. And that's another stigma right there. Only having one way of recovery. That's just silly. So
you've learned a lot in the last 12 months.
Yeah. Any book I can read, on it, I take it. There's a lot of wonderful books out there. People who have lived the experience from all walks of life, from family members to a person who's gone through the crisis themselves, to doctors, and that's where my head is right now. It's just it's in that book, and there's so many different ways to approach this, but the one way we can't keep approaching it is incarcerating people. Just like with mental health, that stigma needs to end. I've dealt with that too. I suffer from pretty severe anxiety, and I was very quiet myself for so long because I thought I had some sort of issue. But once I started talking about it, people around me just started opening up. Oh, I've dealt with it. My family members dealt with it. And the same thing with addiction. When people ask me now, what do you do for your work? I say, oh, I just run a local nonprofit, or addiction nonprofit. And cause what I found is every time I say that, someone goes, oh, hey, I'm 10 years sober. Or, hey, I just got off shooting heroin meth 3 years ago. Or my family members going through it. Everyone has a story.
It's tough to do, but once you start opening up, the help just comes flooding in.
It does. Yeah. It does. And, we have to end this addiction crisis. And it's going to take a long time. It's not going to be overnight. But it's going to take the community and everyone around us to help out. It's not, we got to get over this notion, this thought that it's just happening, you know, on the streets downtown somewhere. It's not. It's happening everywhere.
We have about a minute left, and one question I haven't asked you yet is, where did the name Henry's Uncle come from?
So Henry's Uncle, so I now have he's going to be two on March 27th, my son, Henry, and it was James's first nephew. He was about 8 months old Henry was almost 8 months old when James passed, and James was so excited to be an uncle. He was an uncle to many of his friends' kids, and when I see those pictures of him with other kids, I get very jealous, and it's frustrating to see, because I know how excited he was to be an uncle to Henry, and their personalities are so much alike. I'm a pretty quiet person. James was so just funny and out there, and Henry is the same way. He just has a big smile, big laugh. So that helps me on a day-to-day basis, seeing that, you know, just it reminds me so much of James. So that's how Henry's Uncle came to be.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. I know this is very personal, but I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I've been talking today with Eric Kilgore, founder of Henry's Uncle. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Let's Talk Portland is an Entercom Radio Portland public affairs program.